I'm Ellen Mary.
And I'm Michael Perry.
And he's a plant geek.
And she's a plant addict.
And this is the Plant-Based Podcast.
This is more than just a gardening podcast. We'll be exploring the world of plants from every possible angle. We'll be talking about plant-based diets, plant materials and fabrics, the well-being qualities of plants, and giving plenty of gardening tips and tricks.
So we'll be chatting worldwide to companies and individuals that are being creative with plants in new and exciting ways, from fabulous flower crowns to foliage-filled lounges,
botanical moisturizers to bamboo clothing.
It's all here.
And it's all made of plants.
This episode of the Plant-Based Podcast is brought to you by our friends at VeggiePod. Their integrated raised vegetable garden bed kit makes growing vegetables easy for everyone. With self-watering features and protective canopy, with VeggiePod, you'll be harvesting your own produce in no time. Available in three sizes to suit any garden. Visit veggiepod.co.uk and enter PBP10 for a special discount as a PBP subscriber.
Okay, so today we are in Highgate Woods. And I can hear the birds singing, which is really beautiful. Can you hear that?
I know.
You know, and Robin?
I've been hugging trees as well.
You've been hugging trees as well, yeah. I'm a very good influence on you. So we're here with Kim and Vicky from Handmade Apothecary, who are going to be talking about foraging for herbs, amongst other things as well. So hello, welcome to the podcast.
Hello.
Hi, guys. So tell us a bit about yourselves. Like, where did this all start? How did you start doing foraging and your interest in herbs, that kind of thing?
We have a very different experience. So I grew up in London, to a very working class family, and I grew up on microwave meals. I've been quoted from that before. I grew up on microwave meals, didn't really have any vegetables, I didn't have much connection with nature, just like London suburbs,
you know,
North London.
As well. I've got like quite frustrated.
And I kind of just had I was naturally drawn towards plants and nature, and I spent a lot of time in the garden making potions and, you know, putting dandelion petals in buckets and thinking they were potions and lotions.
Oh, wow.
And waiting for your Hogwarts letter.
Waiting for my Hogwarts letter, exactly.
Oh, I used to make dandelion coffee from ground roots. Yeah.
Oh, dandelion
It never
tea.
Worked, it was just grit. I got it all wrong.
Yeah. Oh, dandelion tea enough. Is so good for headaches.
Really?
Yeah, really good for her.
Yeah, see, she's learning now.
I never doubt anyone. If someone says to me that, you know, watermelon helps the swelling in their big toe, I'll be like, yeah, cool.
Stick it in.
You never know how things are going to work. There are specific things that herbs are used for, but everyone's individual. So. Mm-hmm. And then Kim grew up in the lovely Scottish countryside.
Yeah, so I grew up on the west coast of Scotland in a really beautiful part of the coast. On a really big hill in a temperate rainforest, which we do have some in Britain.
We do, yeah. Oh, shall I just say we are in a cafe Highgate Woods, so the gate keeps slamming. Sorry, but it's very nice.
Kids have just come out of school, so it's quite busy with a lot of kid traffic now. Yeah. So
anyway,
bear with us.
In the woods. It was in the middle of nowhere, by the sea, when I was 18, I just left. Mm-hmm. Back came to London. Oh. Did a few jobs, started working for London Stock Exchange, and just commuting every morning, I just was like, I really don't want to do this. I want to live in London, have all the amenities of London, but live how I was happy in the countryside. So I looked around and I did some animal management ecology courses and eventually came to herbal medicine. And from there, that's how I got into it.
So you've got that, you've actually got the balance then. So you've come to London, so you've got that urban living, but you're still connected with nature, you know, like right in the middle of the city.
Yeah.
You know, people sometimes think that they can get that balance.
Yeah,
you
definitely.
Know, so that's really cool.
Yeah, I think it is possible to do. You just have to, I mean, even if you do have a job in the city, I think it's still possible to do. You just have to look at your hours and working to your life schedule, you know, your schedule to have a work-life balance. You know?
Yeah.
Well, I chose to do it by doing my work hours as being in the countryside, and then all my free time is at the computer, right?
Yeah.
Lost from it, but that's how I did it.
So how did you two meet then? So you've come from totally different backgrounds. How did you first kind of meet up?
So we both did herbal medicine at Westminster University.
Okay.
And that's medically trained.
Yeah, medically trained.
Yes, it's a bachelor's in science, a degree.
Okay.
And yeah, we're basically medically trained, not quite to the same extent as a GP, and we don't necessarily, we don't necessarily examine people as often. But if we needed to, we could, and most herbalists do some form of examination during a consultation. So we met there. I met Kim actually the first time, and it was in a trip to Kew Gardens. She was fluttering around. I thought, oh, she looks really fun.
She was
fluttering around the place looking really fun, and she seemed really knowledgeable. And she kept asking, yeah, because we were in different years.
Was she a square?
No, she seemed really knowledgeable and quite fun. And I was like, I had a look at her. And I think we approached each other and kind of just made friends from there.
Yeah.
And then I invited you to my birthday party, which was a burlesque birthday party.
Oh, yeah.
And
you just came. A Halloween.
And then we found out we had the same birthdays.
Oh, wow.
Really?
What's star sign? What's star sign?
Scorpio.
Scorpio here as well. Nine. Yes. Nine the best. Oh, Ellen, you're outnumbered now.
I'm a Pisces, so I feel really scared. So
happy birthday, Fasim.
Thank you.
Oh, God, is it a birthday soon? Damn it.
Quick, get the present.
Oh, my God. Okay, so you then had the idea to start up a business. How long after that did the idea come?
For Hampstead Heath. City of London,
yeah,
and they have a Conquer Chat. Was it the Conquer Championship?
It was actually here. I started to do some workshops for this woods, actually, Highgate Woods. The City of London have really lovely like community events sometimes, and I had another friend helping me on these workshops, and then she needed to go to move back to the countryside, so I looked around and went, oh, I need somebody else to help me, and then I asked Vicky. And it was just meant to be a small thing, doing a few workshops here and there, but we really connected on our passion for it, so we decided to build a business around it, and we went from there and did more and more workshops, and then eventually got commissioned for a book, and then there was no looking back. We had no choice.
We're stuck together now. Our course at university was very clinical, which is great. Gave us a really good basis in science and research and the physiology of the body, but in a very holistic sense, and I'm really, really grateful for that. But it didn't scratch the itch of what I wanted from my degree, which was to be outside in nature, learn how to identify plants. I think really we did botany as a module, but we only did like two herb walks in the whole entire 4 years that I studied, and so basically most of our foraging skills are from, we're self-taught. And so we were both just like, wow, we've done a degree in herbal medicine and we can't necessarily identify all the plants that we use. So we kind of went out together and started, when Kim was working in Hampstead Heath, she'd like go out and look at the plants, and I would know my local like allotments and parks and stuff.
That's why I got a job in Hampstead Heath. I bought Roger Phillips, Wildflowers of Britain and Ireland, which is that amazing 40-year-old photographic plant identification book, which I always recommend people to start off on, because it's such a nice chronologically laid out photographic way to ID plants, avoiding keys, which if you don't know about keys and botanical keys and identify plants that way, it's a really good place to start. So I took my this book out every day and would sit down and do my work, but also look at the flowers,
hide in a field somewhere.
I was absolutely doing my work looking at this book and learning my plants, and that's a nice thing actually, is it is hard to learn your plants, but if you relax and just do a little bit every day on one plant, you know, at a time, it just builds up.
Yeah.
Sometimes I think, you know, when I first wanted to learn about plants, I was like, oh, I've got these books, I want to know it all now, and I need to like figure it out, how do I cram all this information, but actually it was just the repeated every day looking at plants, which I think everybody could do walking to work. Everybody passes some kind of wasteland.
And also having that genuine interest as well. Like a lot of people often ask me, how did you learn all those Latin names? But when you love plants, you're interested
you
in
just
it. Kind of just rubs off, really.
And actually what you're saying is it's very mindful. You know, you're walking to work, you're on a mission, you've got to get to work. But actually if you just stop and look at what's around you, you're just taking a moment, just even if it's seconds, and you're connecting with nature whilst you're going about your daily life, aren't you? And just taking a moment to learn something.
I literally stop and smell the roses every time I see a rose bush.
I literally
do it, because there's no finer smell than sticking your face in a rose. It's just the most amazing.
But I love the plants that have unexpected fragrances. Did you know that gorse smells of coconut?
It tastes like coconut.
Oh, wow.
I've never tasted it.
Yeah,
it actually tastes of it.
Make a little stir fry with them.
So it's one thing. I did not know they were edible.
They're edible, and I wouldn't like eat boxes them every day, but they're
Have you ever seen the duck syrup as well?
Oh, really? Oh, wow.
Have you ever seen the double flowered one though?
No.
Oh, Ulex Europaeus Floroplina, and it is beautiful. It's like this little golden pom pom.
And that really smells of coconut.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And to be honest, I thought it was stronger on the double, so it's interesting to learn the single has it too.
If you get a bramble tip. Just as brambles are growing, the green sprouting tip, on herbals, we always ask people, try a little bit of this really soft, obviously that when it's really spiky, but before that, when the leaves are still closed in, it takes a few seconds, but you get this coconut taste afterwards.
Wow.
That's really cool.
Yeah, you make a tea out of those.
I don't recommend everyone goes out licking brambles.
Bramble liquor.
That's going to really hurt.
we'll talk about how people can do that in a bit. You know?
Yeah,
For sure.
Safely, yeah.
Oh, hello, there's a wet dog. A wet dog has arrived.
A gorgeous dog joined
us.
Yeah.
Oh, and another.
Oh, gosh.
No,
oh, that one looks
fine.
More wet, actually.
Oh,
beautiful.
So, what's the name of your book? Sorry, you mentioned your book. What's the...
We've got it here.
Oh, we need to wait for Una to go back to her
Una.
Oh,
I might not want
You're starring in our podcast.
If only they could see.
And so is Una.
Oh, here's the book.
So delighted to go viral.
Don't we all?
The Herbal Remedy Handbook.
Yeah, that's the second one. So we thought we'd bring it. That's
They're so beautiful.
They're really lovely
books. That's out. It's called The Handmade Apothecary, after our business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The first book is more about foraging, but also how to make your own medicines. And it's quite a holistic. It has quite a holistic look at. At the body and what to do for various ailments.
What a beautiful book.
Mm. Herbal honey.
Herbal honey, yeah.
But this is, I was always, ever since I was a kid, I was doing these weird experiments. I remember trying to make eucalyptus mouthwash once as well.
Nice.
It was really.
Eucalyptus leaves.
Yeah, I was a strange kid. But, well, no, in,
that, you too?
No, in those days, you were strange if you did
strange,
this stuff, but now it's a lot more normal.
I hang eucalyptus in the shower.
Yeah. That's
in fact, I actually give. There was a magazine called Ms. Magazine, which was like a teenage magazine that used to give away bandanas and you know, plastic rings and stuff. And there was actually a page in that magazine that used to tell you how to do like natural beauty recipes out of yogurts and oats and dandelions, whatever. And that's actually one of the reasons why I got really into herbs.
Really?
I had terrible skin and I had like acne as a teenager and I would make things naturally out of that and cut out little bits.
Wow.
So actually, you know, you're a genius. It's really
important. Well, I always talk about this on the podcast, the fact that we used to be the weird kids, but now
we're the cool kids.
Yeah.
I don't know if we are really, to be honest.
I think we're cool.
Okay, cool.
But before we move on, so The Handmade Apothecary, just to sum up what it does as a company then, just in a few lines.
So we provide walks and workshops and talks, introducing people to the plants outside their front door and the things that have been used, how they've been used for hundreds of years and how they can use them for themselves today. And anything around that, so we do the books as well.
Yeah.
You know,
basically education, really, really important, but in a fun and interactive way. It's, we do recommend things like plant ID books and people to get out there, but it's really, really nice to have, I don't want to call ourselves experts because experts are a funny word, but to have someone who knows what they're doing hold your hand and teach you a bit for your first steps, because there can be poisonous things out there, and there can
be a bit scary, can't
there?
I know we'll come into that.
Similar as well.
Yeah,
so.
There are, and you could easily kind of just get a bit confused. So there has been a little rise in, you know, the talk of herbalism and using herbal medicines. How do you see that going forward? Do you think that it will become a bit more part of our daily lives, or more people start to take, you know, using herbs as opposed to conventional drugs, or with them? Do you think? What's
really
the future
difficult
for
us to be impartial on this? We get asked this quite a lot. People say, do you think that herbal medicine has become more popular? And I'd like to say yes, but because it's a field that I work in and I talk about it every day and think of it every day, I find it difficult to know for sure. I think it has. People tell me from the outside world, the unherbal world, that it has. And you'll see, you know, the health industry in general has just become a lot more even veganism now, everyone's vegan now, you know, health issues become a lot more popular.
People are more into, and especially like businesses, everybody talks about supporting things like mental health and having wellness, and it all feeds into that. So I think with people being aware that there isn't just people get sick and you go take a tablet, but actually things that you can't get
holistic
tablets for, which is about people understanding mindfulness and wellness,
diet changes,
time in nature. So I think it is a bit more popular in that way.
It's part of the whole package of well-being, isn't it? So I think you feel quite empowered if you've got a common illness, you know, a minor illness, if you like, and you can grow something or you go foraging for something, and you know that, you know, you're spending that time with nature, you've collected it yourself or you've researched it, you know that's what you want to go foraging for, you find it, and then you make something to help yourself. The whole process is quite empowering, isn't it?
Even the process of going outside, foraging herbs, breathing in air that's in a woodland, eating herbs that are not radiated or anything before you eat them, like a lot of our supermarket food is, goes through processes and chemical washes and things. We're introducing amazing bacteria to our guts and our microbiomes. It's proven that walking in the woods and breathing in the spores of the mushrooms can are ridiculously beneficial towards your gut health and your and your general immune system. So just the process of that, even if you didn't actually eat anything, you just breathed in the air, would be helpful. Mental health issues, even things like the bacteria and fungus in our gut are linked to different various emotional and mental health issues.
I was talking to someone about that the other day. They'd been researching how the bacteria in your gut changes according to your emotion and your mood and how you feel. So sometimes if you've had a really stressful day, when your stomach plays up, you know, that's why you, it's almost like why you get butterflies if you're anxious. But apparently it's all linked to how you feel as well.
It's really complex because, you know, we've got more bacterial cells in our body than our own body cells, so we're actually like a little walking around community. So it's
I kind of like that. We're aliens.
And it's a new kind of area of research. I mean, you know, it's a kind of, people are doing a lot of research into it, but it's a fairly new area. So I guess we've just got to wait and see what happens,
what comes out of that.
Well, one of our next questions was, do you use remedies at home? But I guess the answer is absolutely yes.
That's why I've got yellow hands today, because I made turmeric capsules yesterday.
So you're not a heavier smoker then?
No, I'm not a heavy smoker. That's mud and that's turmeric, which is normal for me.
What would be your go-to remedies, though? Like, some really popular ones that you make up yourselves?
I always have elderberries. Elderberries they've always been used traditionally for preventative and curative for colds and flu. And there has been some research to show that they help prevent virus replication, stopping flu virus attaching to cells.
I could have done with that a few days ago.
Yeah.
So there is some, you know, all these, you know, old wives' tales and folk uses. If they're prolonged enough, there's usually kind of some truth in them. And I, every time cold or flu is going around, I go straight home and I take some elderberry soup, or even just
that you've made yourself.
You can just have elderberries, dried ones that you can buy from the shop, in a cup of hot water and brew it like you would a tea. And so that's my most commonly used remedy.
And does that keep the cold away?
Well, I haven't had one this winter. I find that as long as I keep on it. I always used to get cold and flu before I did herbal medicine, and now I always take elderberries, and now I don't, but it's not always, you know, perhaps my immune system just got stronger. But it's a nice thing to do as well. It's a nice, it's a nice healthy thing.
But it's connected with nature.
Yeah, but also that's like what you said before, earlier on, is it doesn't, that might work for you, it might not work for me, but something else might work for me. You know, you find the one that works for you.
That's what's nice about herbal medicine. There's so many different herbs that do similar things, and it's all about this process of you finding what works for you and experimenting. It's what we were all doing as teenagers, which was experimenting with herbs and making up potions. And,
the most important thing to remember about real Western herbal medicine is it's a holistic practice. So our book has been simplified as much as possible in order for everyone to be able to use it. It is still, it's still got a lot of holistic practice in there, in that you don't necessarily treat the condition, you treat a person with a condition. So like Kim said, one herb might be used for one person, one herb for another person, depending on what other factors are involved. And it gives you a nice, the first book especially, The Handmade Apothecary, gives you a nice understanding of the body. If you read it cover to cover, at the end you should have a good basic understanding of the physiology of the
body. I'm going to read it cover to cover. Can I just say that?
A to Z kind of thing, you know.
I have just opened it up on a page that says wrinkles.
And ringworm.
Ringworm and wrinkles.
The thing is, wrinkles isn't really a problem, an illness.
I don't know why I'd say it's a problem.
It's not an illness at all. But because we do a lot of our workshops, we do a lot of beauty workshops as well.
Okay.
Like I said, I started my herbal journey, I suppose, because I had acne as a child, as a teenager. And we both worked for Neil Shard Remedies before doing our degrees, and actually throughout doing our degrees, part-time. And so we had a lot of influence about skincare stuff. Mm-hmm. So we thought we might as well everyone likes to treat their wrinkles, I'm sure. Not that we're not saying wear them with pride.
I'm having a really good read.
Stretch marks.
Hey, I wasn't going to say that. We don't need to tell everyone. Anyway.
Our next question is moving towards the foraging side of it, because certainly in part two we'll be letting listeners know how they can go out and find their own herbs and make their own remedies. But the actual question we've got written down here, it sounds like a chat-up line. Do you forage often?
Yes, we do. But yes, no, I do.
Yeah. Really, all right,
do
great.
All the time.
Oh, do you want to go out sometime then?
Yeah, let's go forage.
I'm quite lucky. She's gone red.
Midnight. It's not about having to, like, well, I mean, it is nice to have a whole day foraging, but often it's on the way to work, or just grab a handful of something, and then I have the handful of, and then the next day I have a handful of something, and then it builds up like
constantly
that.
Constantly have a pocket full of something weird, and then put your hand in your pocket and go,
Or you a week later.
I forgot that was there.
Or you wash your clothes, and then you get it out, and everything that's fallen out of the pocket, so everything
sticks. So you're true foragers.
Yeah, where's the craziest place you've ever foraged, like middle of a roundabout, anywhere like that?
We try not to pick near roads because fumes and things. Obvious. So we're quite picky, actually, especially in London, about where we pick.
Even if you wash them, is that good
enough
or not?
Even if you wash them, it's best to try and get greener areas that are not near roads.
You can still be in London, but just not right next to a road.
Okay. I mean, good for listeners to know.
I've ripped a fair few pairs of trousers and stuff trying to climb fences where I've seen something that looks lovely.
I was going to, that was the next question.
Eventually.
Have you had any dramas when foraging? But
you can't own anything. Well, I can't own anything nice in terms of clothing. I remember I bought a really lovely floral play suit because I'm quite a scruffy person. I thought that'd be nice when I do talks in posh places. And then I wore it over here, and when we were doing a walk, and I tried to climb a fence to show someone a bit of yarrow. And as I went over, it kind of split the crotch completely, and that was the end of that.
Yeah. Okay.
But otherwise, we don't really have any dramas. You do have to have permission when you're foraging, and where we do our walks, because I've worked for City of London, I get a licence and permission to do it, and we're not foraging in quantity, we're foraging small
for
amounts
identity.
For education purposes.
Okay. Uh-huh.
But you could, you know, but usually if people are just foraging a handful of things here and there, black people shouldn't really have any issues.
Especially,
you know,
weeds.
Yeah, it's weeds.
Mm. What we try to say to people is tree medicine. So things on, like, lime flowers, which are out in June.
Linden flowers.
Linden flowers or lime flowers.
Which is a tilia species rather than
the
lime fruit.
Yeah, it's a huge, huge tree. And unless you had a cherry picker, you wouldn't be able to really pick too much of it to cause a lot of damage. Mm-hmm. Or a ladder, you know, if you carried a ladder with you. And things like nettles and blackberries, as Kim said before.
Dandelion.
Normally local councils don't mind too much about them. It is a good idea to get permission, and also don't travel to a far distance or somewhere you've never been before and you don't know the land and forage there. Forage in your local park when you've seen it every day. You know if they spray things. You know if they're using horrible chemicals.
Yeah, that's really important.
It's a really good thing to
to
have
be familiar with your surroundings. And
in fact,
know.
We start every herb walk with a boring 10-minute talk about safety.
Well,
it's important.
Coming up in part two then, we will go in further depth about foraging, give us some tips. For listeners, I'm really excited because I'd love to forage, but I'm really scared about picking the wrong things. So that's what we'll discuss.
It's brilliant. Yeah. Well, I've spent many years foraging, not just in the wild, but also in my own garden. So maybe I can teach you a few things too.
Oh, yes, that'd be
This episode of the Plant Based Podcast is brought to you by our friends at VeggiePod. Their integrated raised vegetable garden bed kit makes growing vegetables easy for everyone.
So we're still here in Highgate Woods with Kim and Vicky, and we are surrounded by nature, birdsong, but also wet dogs. So occasionally there might be a dog that runs up to us on the podcast, so bear with us if we take a minute to shoo it away. We'll stroke it for a minute, but we've got to get on with the task in hand, girls. Because in part two, we're going to talk about foraging and how people can start to forage for themselves at home, whether that's in their local area, perhaps in a field, or even by the side of the pathway, or in their own garden. So kind of just in a nutshell, what do people need to look out for when they're foraging? Give us an idiot's guide to foraging.
Okay, so the first thing I think is to, while you do want to be cautious on foraging, not to be frightened, because it feels like there's thousands of plants out there and you want to know them all, but actually you just need to go out and learn a few at a time. So the first thing you should do is get a few good guidebooks. I mentioned Roger Phillips's Wildflowers of Britain and Ireland before, which is a really good one because it's photographic, but it's good to get a few so you can cross-reference. When you get a plant and you think you know what it is, look up all the descriptions and just make sure it is what you've got. But also, the other thing is to find someone that does know the plant as well, because there's nothing like being shown a real plant in real life. So find a local herbalist or forager. The Association of Foragers directory will tell you a local... will tell you by area where your local foragers are.
That is the best way to learn, isn't it? Is it just with anything? If you know, I learn about the plant by planting it and you're watching it grow, and then that's how you kind of... So that's...
Exactly. So find someone in your local area that does kind of herb walks or identification walks or botany walks, and then get to know it, and then just learn a few. And then as you go to work every day, find a few that you keep seeing and learn it throughout the year. And there's nothing like learning a plant from when it comes to as a sprout at the beginning of the year all the way to it, you know, its full life cycle as really knowing a plant. Not just knowing when it's in flower or when it's in fruit. Because everybody knows an apple tree when the apples are on it. But do you know an apple tree?
Good point.
Yeah, it's a very good point.
And I think a top tip that I picked up from you guys in the break is don't forage in your best clothes.
No, don't forage in your best clothes.
You ruined some clothes that way, haven't you?
All of my clothes are now foraging clothes. I'm a gardener and a forager.
You're going to get brambles ripping them. You're gonna get
If you want the good stuff, you've got to be prepared to climb for it sometimes.
That's fair enough. It. So is there anything that... if you're starting out with foraging that you really need to take care of, as in the things that you might forage for and use for yourself, so you know, people who are breastfeeding or pregnant, that kind of thing, do you, you know, that
that's a very important thing. Breastfeeding and pregnant women, this, you really should get everything, you should check every time, like with anything, like any medication you take. Herbs are largely safe, but not for everyone, and depending on what conditions you have, any long-term or chronic condition should be checked. We always say it's a good idea to have these things monitored by a medical herbalist or a doctor before trying a new remedy. It says it in the book as well. And then there are a lot of herbs that are very safe and are considered foods. So like young dandelion leaves, you can eat them as salads in quite a large quantity. Lime blossom flowers, but Kim, sorry, tilia flowers or linden flowers, you can eat those and have lots of tea made from that. Hawthorn berries, things like that, that you've been used as food in the past, but they're also medicines because there's a fine line between food and medicine.
Okay. Yeah, you don't have to even think about really obscure herbs. You can forage in your own garden for things like thyme and rosemary and rose petals as well. So if you... you might want to find someone that has a garden or an allotment and go for those things first and start learning your plant families. Like the mint family is a really good plant family to start identifying at first, because there's so many of them and it's so easy to identify, and you've got things like thyme, rosemary, mint, sage, and then you can start looking at the mint family out in the local woods perhaps.
Very useful family as well, and largely quite a safe family to know as well.
Yeah, because what about mistaken identity? Are there some? Is there the danger that you'll see something and think it's
always
a herb to forage and it's actually something else? Is there any particular plants that can be a problem?
For example, over just in the woods here, there's a massive patch of wonderful wild garlic, and growing right next to it is Lords and Ladies, which is quite toxic, and they've got similar shiny leaves, green, deep green leaves, and when they grow, especially when they're very small and they're just sprouting out of the ground, it's really easy. Just come in with a pair of scissors or whatever and snip, and you've got both things in your basket. So it's really important, not only when you're IDing, but when you're collecting, that you're doing it mindfully and you're looking at every single leaf as it goes in a basket. If you aren't, sometimes what you might want to do with plants and with mushrooms, if you're foraging for them, is take one home with you. If you don't want to carry around loads of ID books, and identify at home. And if you do that, it's really important to have separate baskets for the things that you know and the things that are things you want to ID, because the things you want to ID are potentially poisonous before you know them. So things like that are quite important.
But is highly... what does highly toxic mean? As in stomach aches, headaches, or actual something terrible?
So we don't want to scare people, because it can feel a bit scary starting out, but actually one of the things we do teach is the plant families to avoid. Because
when you're a novice, for sure.
When you're a novice, you might accidentally pick some arum instead of wild garlic, but it is unlikely. You just that's why you have to be mindful. You can't be thinking about your tax return while you're doing foraging. You want to be like looking at the...
We never want to think about that, do we? Come on.
But also, if you do want to go foraging, like I said, go with some experts first and get your eye in, especially to the plants that you do want to avoid. So there's one particular plant family that you do see out and about, which is the carrot family, or the Apiaceae family, which does contain hemlock. So if you were to think which is also the Parsley family, so it looks like a nice bit of parsley. So if somebody was to pick that and eat that and think it was parsley because they hadn't looked at a book, then you would die, really. But there's very few...
Well, yep,
and
just
you would
say
die.
It as it is. Yeah.
Die,
that just answered the question, didn't it?
But it's really unlikely somebody would ever go out and go, I don't know what this is, I'm going to eat it, you know?
Yeah. On the side, of course.
And it's really... once you know that that plant family exists, it's one of the easiest ones to identify and avoid.
Okay.
Because it looks like parsley, they've got clusters of white flowers. If it looks like parsley, and it's the wild carrot family, so if you get your eye into that, just avoid anything that looks like that. They're all very quite similar looking. And it's just about being a bit sensible.
Not everyone is, though. We've done a herb walk before and deliberately said, because it's a huge group of people, we did it for a community space, and we said to them, most importantly, don't eat anything unless you see us eat it first. Some guy just comes along and starts nibbling on one of the parsley families, and we had to double check that it wasn't hemlock.
Okay.
So people do silly things.
Yeah, well, I know, but you just have to say to people, don't be silly about things.
Have you ever mistakenly had anything?
Ooh, I did something funny once. Well, it was funny because it wasn't me, it was someone else. When I was working at Neil's Yard, I had my best friend Geeta working with me, and she's a health freak, and she... it was like vegan, raw, like woke up at 5 a.m. every morning, made her smoothies, her soaked overnight oats, like all this. She's the most glowing, you can tell, her skin's gorgeous.
So it pays off, all of this. It
pays off, you know, wakes up, does an hour meditation, amazing. Anyway, I had been making elderberry jams, pies, crumbles, I prefer the fatty kind of things, and tinctures and syrups. And she said, oh, could you get me some? I said, yeah, sure. And this was before I was studying home medicine, when I was working at Neil's Yard, and I had a novice kind of like attitude to foraging. So I went out and grabbed her a load of elderberries, brought them back, gave them to her, told her what I did with them. She then blended them into a smoothie. They were elderberries, they weren't poisonous. Blended them into a smoothie and drank the whole lot. Now, the pips inside elderberries, as well as the bark and the leaves, make you puke violently if you don't cook them first.
Did you hold her hand?
So I wasn't there. She took me home and she called me up in the morning and she was like, Vicky, I've just been violently sick. I've had projectile purple vomit everywhere. Are you sure you haven't poisoned me? And I was not sure because even though I'd been eating them, I was like, oh God. So I went back to my books and I looked and I was like, no, I'm really sure. I've been eating them for months. And then I read on the internet, if you eat them raw in that way, you can make yourself very sick. So it's not even about mistaking the plants sometimes, it's just about knowing the traditional
what to
use.
Do with them.
Processing plants is really important. And in our first book, on the second book, we talk a lot about how to process your plants into year-round remedies.
Okay.
Really, really important. Because you're not only sick when the elderberries are out for
you might
be sick all year round. So if you've got a syrup or a tincture or tea that you have on hand, you can use it all year round.
I think the other moral for that story as well is just because something's natural and people seem to think that natural and pure and clean in the wilderness is like safe.
Yeah.
And so the more you have of it, the better it would be. Mm. So it's about having things in moderation as well. So smoothieing a load of elderberries is not a good idea.
Are you still friends?
We're still friends.
Oh, phew.
My best friend. Yeah.
So is there one plant that you could forage for that you would recommend, like the easiest one to forage for, and then what would you do
kind
with
of starter forager?
Like the starter nettle.
Well, it's the same thing.
Nettle.
But I think everybody knows blackberries. Even if people don't think they don't know how to forage, everybody has been foraging at some point in their life, because everybody's picked blackberries. I mean, I would like to say everybody, I'm pretty sure.
I'd like to hope everyone had, because it'd be really sad childhood if you didn't.
And if you've got a group of people in a room and said, hands up who's ever fallen in a nettle patch, I'm pretty sure 99.99% of people have done it, so they know how to identify those two, and they both have loads of uses throughout the whole year. So you can just start on simple things that you do know, and you've got loads of those uses.
So what would you do then? Blackberries, how would you then use blackberries? Because you can use more than just the
crumble,
fruit.
Crumble, blackberry. Yeah.
It's much more than just crumble, Ellen.
Come on, I'm sorry, but yes, how would you use them?
We can put the blackberries in vinegar.
Okay.
And traditionally that's been used.
Oh, that's nice.
You infuse it, and it makes a really refreshing drink as a cordial, actually, a little bit of honey and vinegar with blackberry in fizzy water. It's really refreshing in the summer. Uh-huh. And also you can dilute it and use it as a gargle for sore throats.
Okay.
Uh-huh. And the tips are really dry and astringent. It's been used for upset tummies, like runny tummies, and also, again, for upset sorry, sore throats. As
well. Okay.
And they tasted coconut, like
young,
I think you
yeah,
said.
Yeah, a little
right?
bit coconutty. Yeah. So it's a young leaf tips, which can also be eaten, like, we'll put it in a little bit in salad. And then the other one that Vicky was talking about was nettles as well.
Yeah.
Well, I like nettles for novices because they say it's the only plant that you can ID in the dark. You know, like,
it's damn right you can.
There's a lot.
How do you know?
Well, you fall on them, you know.
What have you been doing in the dark?
Oh, yeah.
In the woods.
There's a lot of plants that look like nettle. There are plants in the mint family and other families that look like nettle. You've got dead nettles, you've got hawhounds.
Uh-huh.
They look very, very similar, but the way you can really, really tell is if you touch it. If it stings you, it's a stinging nettle.
You know.
We have a few types of stinging nettle in the UK, and we use them all interchangeably. So if you touch it and you don't mind and it stings you, you know you've got a stinging nettle. So you've got that extra layer of identification,
mm-hmm.
which is something that we always teach people on our courses. People will come in, and I don't know why, but they keep their hands in their pockets, and we go, this is a hawthorn flower, and they keep their hands in their pockets. And we're like, no, pick one, smell it, taste the petal, you know, crush it. How does it feel? What pattern is it growing
in?
What
time
of year is it?
No.
Pick that nettle.
You have to use all of your senses for identification.
Yeah.
And nettle's a really poignant example of that.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And what do you make with your nettles? And what's your recipe?
So another thing that we really, really, that I don't know that I'm not into and Kim's not into is health fashion.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So you've got a lot of these things, it's like, you know, I said I use turmeric and I do, but not because it's fashionable. I've always used turmeric, but different things come into fashion and they come and go. Nettles are a local superfood that we don't need to travel from Brazil. They're local, they're here, they're full of vitamins, minerals, all of the things you need for healthy skin.
They're free.
Yeah. They're really high in protein, can be up to 20% protein, and for a leafy green vegetable, that's ridiculous. They contain
loads of iron.
Vitamin D, like all the vitamins you need for vegans, are brilliant.
This is sounding good for me.
So yeah, you can juice them if you've got a masticating juicer. We make juices and you can freeze them in ice cube trays and add them to smoothies and things. We make delicious soup every year, which I freeze in huge batches. Kim's just done a recipe for nettle oat cakes.
Wow,
you can dry them and sprinkle them into bolognese. They've got very little flavour if you use them like a tablespoon in a big pot of food, but just gives an extra kick of nutrient value to your dinner.
Okay.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's really
cool. But medicinally, they're used for allergies, they're used for people with iron and anemia.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Allergies. All kinds of things. That's the leaf, and then you've got the root and the seed, which you use for different things as
Nature's
well.
Nature's amazing, isn't it?
It's
so much to offer.
Part.
What, like, this, I just... Obviously, herbal medicines and nature was used so much more in years gone by, and then conventional drugs took over. What kind of stop? Where did we stop using herbs and foraging for our own medicines? Do you know what I mean? What happened? Was it just that the drug companies came in and said, you know, we're going to do this now? And
there's a massive mixture of things.
I think
which
that's a really, really long and complicated story because even up until the World Wars, drugs were from plants. And in fact, a lot of our pharmaceutical drugs...
They're derived from plants.
A lot of like morphine is from poppies.
Yeah.
And some heart medication is from foxgloves.
Yeah.
And aspirin originally came from willow tree, and you know, and there's still drugs being derived from new research drugs being derived from plants, like recent childhood leukemia drugs from Madagascar periwinkle and breast cancer drugs from the yew tree. So it's not like a stop and start, but
I guess we wouldn't recognise them as plants anymore, a lot of those, would we? So.
Well, I think it's more about the question is when did people stop using plants for foraging for food and medicine themselves? It's more about the business, it's about how. Because people, like, they might know bramble or nettle, but actually people don't know the plants anymore.
Yeah.
And it's more like that kind of knowledge has been lost.
And it's really... That's particularly in the UK. We do herbal, and people from other countries in Europe, I can mention lots of them, tend to know a lot more about herbs than we do. We just... I think scaremongering. I think...
Yeah.
I remember being a child, and my mum... being like, you cannot touch a mushroom because you die of poisoning.
Yeah.
There's no mushroom that I know of that you can touch and it will kill you.
Yeah.
If you touch it and put your hand...
Oh, gosh!
Wow,
well, we've had a dog join us.
Oh, he's lost his mummy and daddy.
I read somewhere that In Germany, 90% of people actually use herbs for medicine themselves. So they actually will forage.
Yeah,
90%.
Germany is a. It's really high. Has a different kind of integration between herbal medicine and medical care. So a lot of herbalists or doctors over there. Like GP doctors. So it's a different kind of structure of their medical system.
Right, but also China as well, Chinese medicine.
Of course, in China they have a big
But apparently the Chinese medicine wasn't recognised for doctors as such until very recently. So it still wasn't on the in the system, if you like, until really recent.
They have done for a lot of...
But it's not recognised as actually medical. Until very recent.
Most mainstream medicine systems nowadays wouldn't... If I ever talk to a doctor and I say I'm a medical herbalist, they kind of... I don't like to say it, but they kind of scoff about it, a lot of them. You do get the odd doctor who's really, really in tune and very happy to kind of incorporate herbal medicine into their treatments.
Yeah.
And they do it, for instance, in Japan. They use some medicinal mushrooms alongside chemotherapy treatments to potentiate the treatment of chemotherapy and also lessen side effects.
Okay. I love the fact that it's just kind of all one bundle of goodness at the end of the day. It's the whole process, isn't it?
It's brilliant. I love the fact that you can start doing this at home as well. And we will have an article on the website at the same time that gives you a few ideas of what you can start to forage yourself.
So just tell us about your socials. Where can we find you on social media?
Okay, so we have Instagram is our main stomping ground, which is at
Handmade Apothecary
_ Apothecary.
Well remembered.
And then we've got Facebook, yeah, exactly.
And the books are The Herbal Remedy Handbook and The Handmade Apothecary.
We also have a website, which is kind of what our spot is for our book, and we've got a lot of blogs and recipes and information up on the website.
Oh,
people
want
to look at some free, because I think that this kind of information should be free to everyone. So
we've got a lot of stuff. Because nature is free to everyone, isn't it?
And so is information.
Thank you so much. Happy foraging, folks.
I can't think of a pun this time, sorry.
All I've got in my mind is you falling on nettles in the forest in the dark. Hey, MP, we're recording.
Turn the camera away. I'm just scratching my nose.
If you listen to the podcast frequently, you will know that sometimes to do our gossip sections, Michael and I have to do it by Skype. And Michael likes to put the camera really close to his face. So it's like, I know every detail on your face now from Skype.
Oh, look how long my hair is.
It's very floppy, isn't it?
It's nearly down to the end of my nose.
It's cute. What are you going to do with it?
I really don't know, because usually in the autumn I go for some cool new style.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure. I really would like to have a perm.
Do it.
Yeah.
Have some just waves.
A gentle wave.
Although that does remind me of when I was younger, when I was kind of early teens. I have really, really frizzy hair. My hair is still frizzy now, but I have to straighten it. And so if I'm anywhere where it's humid, my hair goes...
My God, don't I know it.
Act totally crazy, and I hate it. So if any of you watch Friends, just think about Monica. That's my hair. And
shout out to anyone that has unintentional frizzy hair.
Yeah, I love you, and I completely get it. So when I was early teens, pre-straighteners, that's probably showing my age, the only way to tame it was to perm it. And so I had quite a few perms over the course of a few years where it was really, really, really little curls. So I had really, really curly hair. And I thought it was quite cute, but I did see an old passport photograph. I think it was a passport photograph, or maybe... Yeah, I think it was. Oh, it looked horrendous. Yeah, horrendous.
We never realised at the time how awful we looked, did we?
But it was cool at the time, you know. It was cool. So I'd say it was probably late 80s.
That's what you thought. Cool for lumps.
Late 80s, early 90s, perhaps something like that. So I think it was okay then. But yeah, looking back, that was a bad move.
Well, do you know what damn crazy hair I had when I first joined college?
What?
I don't know if I can even tell you.
What was it like?
It was kind of like curtains, but I can't even tell anyone this. Apart from the people that saw it. I like... the top obviously it was curtains, and then the two bits at the front, I would like dye, like maybe blonde.
Oh, like I know people at school who had that. That's awful. Like a streak of like blonde at the front of the curtain.
Oh, I don't know what I was doing. Jeez.
Actually, my sister had that. She had a huge streak of blonde in the front of her hair.
Oh my god! And sometimes I would like make it red instead. I know.
Get you. Anyway, I think you should have some waves in that floppy hair of yours. That would look really cool.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Sure. Well, you're seeing me this morning, Ellen, purely unadulterated.
Oh, hey.
This is me, authentic as hell.
Me too, by the way. I've got no makeup on. I've got no makeup on, and as soon as my picture came up on Skype, Michael said, "Oh, you look tired, darling."
You did look like a ghost of your former self.
I've got no makeup on and I am really tired.
Oh, I'm really hot at the moment. I think I'm having the menopause.
You know, just because you're turning 40 doesn't mean that you're going to have the man menopause.
By the time... When's the podcast go out? Will I be 40 by then?
No, I don't think so.
No? All right. Well...
Nearly. This podcast will go out just before your 40th.
On the 20th, I think. Yeah.
So
you'll be in my run-up.
Yeah. Are you coming up for a part for your 40th birthday party in November, by the way?
Do what? Love?
Are you coming here to Norfolk to have a party in November?
What do you mean?
For your birthday?
What? You have, my own? What do you mean?
Oh, my goodness. If you listen to the last podcast, you'll know that you had been invited to a party here in November.
I don't know what you've said until I listen back.
You're so funny.
Yeah, but I think it's on a Saturday.
It's on a Friday.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah.
Oh, it's Saturday in my diary. I'm going to change that over.
No, it's a Friday.
Okay, cool. But it's not my birthday party. It's someone else's.
It's someone else's birthday party, but it can be a joint 30th and 40th, if you like.
Okay,
She will be very happy about that.
I don't know if I can talk to people that young.
I know the feeling.
Might bring me out in a rash.
I'm older than you. You're only just now turning 40, but my next birthday, I'm going to be 42.
Oh,
yes. Oh, excuse me.
That will get bleeped out.
No,
but it's amazing, though, because you've got such a nice young spirit. Nobody would imagine you're, like, on your way to being 50. Oh, God, I'm getting a hot flush. I think that's karma.
I can't speak.
Oh, I need to miss an open
window. To be fair, at no point do I ever think about the fact my next big birthday will be 50. I think, personally, I honestly think that the date of birth on my birth certificate is incorrect and that I'm actually 31 and not 41.
I got to point out, I'm still making that vegetarian chili that I was making last episode.
You're still doing it now?
Yep, still doing
it. That's been 2 weeks in the making. That's been 2 weeks.
It smells really strong.
That's funny. So, have you got anything in your food that you've foraged for since we have just been out foraging with
Handmade Pottery? No, I'm popping outside now to have a look.
Cool. What have you got?
Going to get some rosemary.
Nice.
Because that gives a nice meaty flavour to think, even though I've already put too much beef stock in, as it is. Maybe some thyme, too.
Do you know?
Mildew, if I'm honest.
I've got some...
What?
Just going to say something. When you started cooking it, you told me it was vegetarian.
Yeah?
You just told me that you put loads of beef stock in it.
Exactly. God, you're so slow. Pick up on jokes, Ellen. Jesus. Oh, my God. What is the point?
So
what
it's not vegetarian point? At all. Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. It took you a minute. Oh, my God.
It took me all this time. You are
beef stock accidentally.
You are such a tricker.
All the same colour. You what?
You're such a tricker. You trick me all of the time.
I know. You're just too slow off the mark, honestly.
I'm getting old.
Do you think our senses of humour fade as we get older?
No way. Mine's getting more wicked. I think it's getting more wicked.
You get more sharp, do you?
Yeah, no, not more sharp, but a bit more wicked, I think.
Oh, no, I'm definitely more sharp, yeah.
No, I'm definitely not sharp in any way.
Oh, Ellen.
Yes.
Yeah, what did you forage last?
Actually, funnily enough, wild garlic.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
I made wild garlic mayonnaise once.
Mmm.
In the bush.
In the bush?
Well, not quite. No, in the bush.
What does that mean?
I was staying in a self-catering cottage and I made it there.
In
the
bush. I thought you were talking about Australia or something. You foraged wild garlic in the bush of Australia, took it back to a
English
cottage.
English bushcraft.
Very strange. Anyway, yeah.
That's a new trend.
Wild garlic. What's the last thing you foraged for, apart from rosemary?
I don't remember. But when I was a kid, I was always picking random stuff, making nettle soup. I was eating hawthorn leaves. Oh, maybe the last thing I foraged was a hawthorn leaf in the wild.
They taste like coconut.
No, I feel like kind of nutty, really.
What, the leaf or the bud? Sorry, did you say the leaf?
You what, sorry?
Did you say the flower or the leaves? What did you say?
The leaf, but you can also use the berry as well.
I think the bud tastes like coconut.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I'll have to try it.
Yeah.
I've seen a handmade apothecary, like eating it fresh off the tree.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and that's like, when I think it tastes cool. Like coconut, yeah. Those girls are great though, aren't they? They know so much and provide courses and all sorts though. It's really awesome to have caught up with them and gone for a little walk.
Defo.
I love the fact that you're constantly playing with your hair the whole time.
No, sorry. We weren't nibbling on the treats though, were we? That's a whole another level to tree hugging, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I don't think that we should be nibbling trees.
It's like tree nuzzling.
Can you imagine the sap? Oh.
Yeah.
So we're Skyping this gossip and the last gossip because we've been super busy just travelling around here, there and everywhere that we haven't really caught up, have we? So where have you been recently? I know you've been to Niagara Falls.
Oh, I had a crazy few weeks. I was in Germany, then I was in Japan, and then I was back in UK for a week to film something particularly exciting, and then on to Canada. I was hoping to have less of a schedule, but then something else got pushed in. This must be like what Rihanna's life is like. Rihanna of plants.
You're the Rihanna of the gardening world.
I had a lovely time making containers, giving presentations, Forbidden World of Plants. So all the plants that look like boobs and stuff. Yeah, it's been great.
Now, where were you when you were in Japan?
What do you mean, where was I?
Where were you providing your talks in Japan? What was the name?
As in what area?
What was the name of the school, the gardening school?
Oh, Barakura English Garden.
That will be it. So I have a little story to tell about that.
Oh, okay, what?
This morning, morning, I received a message on Facebook from a very lovely person who was a student at the gardening school where you lectured at.
Yeah.
And that very lovely person messaged me on Facebook and said, I gave your husband one of these. Did you like it? And then a photograph, and it said, here's mine. And at first I thought, what on earth is this? This must be some kind of spam. I gave your husband one of these. And the photograph was blocked out. So, of course, I had a little peek. And it was a Japanese kimono, and it showed that this person was the student at the Japanese gardening school. So basically, whoever this lovely person was gave you a very beautiful floral kimono, which I had actually seen you in on Instagram, and I realised that she thought you were my husband.
Yes, there's a lot of things wrong there. I mean, firstly, she's very enthusiastic and a bit stalkery to have contacted you and worked out that you're my wife, that you're not. But also, I didn't know it was a lady's set of pyjamas. I've been wearing them for a week. I thought they were just cute.
They suit you.
But it turns out I need to give them to you.
They suit you. There you go.
How crazy.
And that really made me laugh. I was like, that's definitely not my husband that she's talking about.
This is mad. Oh, my God. Okay.
Anyway, I don't ever allude to you as being my husband, but I do very frequently call you my partner in plants.
Yeah, of course.
So that's what I think you are. And yes, please, I'll have those lovely floral pyjamas, thanks.
Crazy world, huh?
Funny. Anyway, where are you off to next?
I'm in UK for a few weeks.
Yeah. Oh, you're house sitting. You're house sitting for me, aren't you?
Yes, I am. And hopefully I'll do a very good job.
I'm sure you will. Yeah. All good. Very good. You're house sitting for me whilst I head off over to Australia. I'm going via Singapore and then a little holiday in Bali. And then going over to Sydney, I'm going to be doing some work and a lot of play. I'm even going to be meeting our podcast sponsors, VeggiePod. Yeah, we're going to meet up in Sydney because that's where they're from. So it'd be really ace to meet up with the guys who started VeggiePod in the first place. And then I'm coming back via Dubai where my niece lives to hang out with her for a few days as well. So I'm gone the whole of October and you're in charge.
Cool. Okay. Well, I'm not going to water your kokodamas because I think they're stupid anyway.
Well, we could discuss them if you like. I have actually, as I've been sitting here repotting plants whilst we're talking, I have pulled my kokodamas apart and potted the plants. Because the kokodamas just dry out so quickly that it's just pretty hard to keep on top of.
They're really impractical.
They look really lovely, and I like what they look like, but if you need low maintenance plants, then actually they need to be soaked pretty frequently.
Well, yeah, they must always be in the sink, because even like once they've been soaked, you've got to leave them to drain. So like,
yeah,
you can't put them up till they're dry, and then when they're dry, they need watering again. So like, what?
Oh, on a completely different note, I've brought home with me some fennel, some calendula and some borage, and I wonder if when you're here you could maybe just pick the seeds off them to collect some seeds for me.
Seeds of what, sorry?
Fennel, calendula and borage.
Oh, cool. Yeah,
I brought them in. They're on my office floor drying out. So if I leave some little pots, will you collect the seeds for me? That would be amazing.
I might do, Lee.
No, that do you just cut out then? By the way, you cut out whenever you're going to say something sarcastic.
yeah. Skype has got an inbuilt kind of plug-in for that, hasn't it?
Or when you're going to swear, because you get really told off when you do that too.
Yeah, Skype can detect that sort of malarkey.
Anyway, it's been really lovely chatting with you, MP, but I've got to go because I've got like a day left before I go on my travels.
Cool, awesome, well... Have a nice time.
I hope your meal turns out very nice. I'm sure it smells great.
All that beef
stock. Gross. All right. Oh, I think you better go and deal with the redness, the hot flush you're having right now.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know what to do.
Maybe go for a walk and get some air. That might be the answer.
Yeah, I think it's just age. Yeah, okay. Cool.
See you soon.
See you before you say anything more cheeky.
Look after my house when I'm away.
Today's podcast partner is VeggiePod, the integrated all-in-one garden bed suitable for anyone interested in growing your own. You'll be amazed at how quickly your vegetables grow in a VeggiePod. And as a special offer for our listeners, VeggiePod are offering PPP subscribers 10% off any sized VeggiePod when purchased with a stand or a trolley. Simply go to veggiepod.co.uk and enter PBP10 on checkout.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Plant Based Podcast.
Have a browse of the rest of the library or hop on over to the website, which is theplantbasedpodcast.net.
You'll also find our social media links. Please connect with us and let us know about any plant-based projects that you think we should be covering on the show.
And make sure you subscribe to our podcast so you'll be the first to hear the next episode. We're releasing once a fortnight. So until next time, enjoy the world of plants.